This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill
from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.
And we're up to segment number three in our continuous coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill. Let's go to the courtroom.
The jurors are not present. The defendant is also here present in the courtroom. The court wanted to take up an issue on an evidentiary ruling before the jurors came back in after the lunch break. At issue are three proposed exhibits that have been offered. They haven't yet technically been offered, but in essentially a motion in limine here that's been argued, they've been given courtesy copies to the court and counsel for a preliminary ruling as to the admissibility or inadmissibility of the exhibits. Where they're not identified by proposed numbers at this point, I'll just refer to the three exhibits as follows. I'll be referring to the first one as what's we'll call the Nick Edwards PowerPoint. The second one is the James and Elena Story PowerPoint. And the third proposed exhibit I'll call the Vallow Timeline. If counsel needs any clarification as to which proposed exhibits I'm referencing, let me know. Otherwise, I'll use those titles. So going forward, the court has reviewed some of the case law and the rules that would govern these exhibits.
And, Your Honor, I apologize for interrupting. There was one thing I was going to see if I could just clarify briefly for the record with regard to the Nick Edwards PowerPoint.
Yes.
There had been an indication that there were no police reports. I went back to verify. There were approximately 26 police reports drafted or created by Mr. or Investigator Edwards in this matter. So I did just want to clarify that for the record.
Okay. Thank you for the additional information on that, Ms. Blake. So the court first looks at a couple of different rules, which I previously cited this morning. Rule 1006 allows summaries to prove content, and that indicates summaries may be used to prove the content of voluminous writings, recordings, or photographs that cannot be conveniently examined in court. And then I also had previously referenced the rule that relates to a witness's ability to refresh their recollection, which I think is Rule 612 of the Idaho Rules of Evidence. Some of the case law we've reviewed is not a state case, but an Idaho federal case, which is called United States versus Babichenko, which is B-A-B-I-C-H-E-N-K-O. That's 543 F sub 3rd, 946, a 2021 Idaho case. Some of the case law in that case does go through an analysis of use of summary exhibits, and a few of the citations or quotes out of there is that summary exhibits must be reasonably accurate and correct in their characterizations of the underlying materials, and also summary exhibits are distinct from pedagogical devices, which are helpful testimonial aids but typically not admitted into evidence. And then also in that case they talked about, quote, while a single item may appear innocuous in a vacuum, the government has repeatedly stressed the breadth of the alleged scheme and is entitled to present a comprehensive picture in its case in chief. That quotes a case, United States versus Daly, 974 F. 2nd, 1215. It says, moreover, these are exactly the kind of transactions that are best presented to the jury as Rule 1006 summaries, as it would be a waste of time to present the discrete actions and materials piece by piece. And that's, again, citing that Babichenko case. So there is precedent out there to allow a sort of summarizing witness, which the state is purporting to use here, to use a summary to detail or present what that case calls a comprehensive picture of its case in chief. The first exhibit then that's been proposed is the what I'll refer to as the Nick Edwards PowerPoint. The defense has raised some argument to say it shouldn't be admitted. One is a timeliness argument, that it contains argument or it's argumentative, and that it's cumulative have been some of the points raised. The court would note that there's some additional case law that talks about says the trial court should carefully examine summary charts, and here it would be this PowerPoint, to determine that everything contained in them is supported by the proof. And that's out of a case called Abbas, ABBAS, 730 Fed 2nd, 1300. So one of the issues here is, back to the timeliness argument, is there time to carefully examine the entire summary and make sure everything in it is supported by the proof? Going through this Nick Edwards PowerPoint, there's some different issues I'll raise here that relate to that. Again, citing another case law, there's an admonition to guard against situation in which figures, computation, and charts acquire, quote, an existence of their own, independent of the evidence which gave rise to them. Holland versus United States, 348, U.S. 121. In the Edwards PowerPoint, there's multiple issues I've seen with that PowerPoint. First of all, it just appears to be simply a closing argument PowerPoint. There's editorialization within the PowerPoint. For example, there's a slide, which is slide number 49, and that slide 49 has a quotation in there, and it quotes, after it was suggested by Coroner Dye that, and then it goes on to state a quotation, and then it references a different officer's police report for that information, and that's a different officer that's already been in court and already testified. And so it cites directly from a report, which we wouldn't allow the testifying officer to do, and this is another officer that would come in and summarize what's, or quote from an officer's report, and under Rule 612, even the officer on the stand wouldn't be allowed to do that. They would have to look at a report if they needed to refresh their recollection, but they would not be allowed to just quote from or read out of their report, which would be what is being sought in that particular slide. Slide 55 references witness interviews that are not in evidence. It quotes from interviews from Melanie Gibb, who's a witness who already came in and testified in trial, and it quotes directly statements she made, not in trial, statements she made in a pretrial interview. There are simply too many issues with the way that whole PowerPoint is put together. I find the entire thing essentially argumentative. It's not an officer testifying about facts they're aware of. It's basically prepackaged testimony in a presentation that the officer would go through step by step of pre-summarized and pre-written testimony, which doesn't comply with Rule 403. I think that would be unfairly prejudicial to the defense to allow a witness to not just prepare testimony, but go in and put their testimony together in a multimedia presentation. Prosecutors get to do that. You get to tie all your evidence together in a closing argument. But that particular exhibit is got enough issues. I don't think it can be reasonably corrected in order to be submitted for the jury to consider in this case. I think it goes directly against this admonition to guard against it becoming something different and have an existence of its own independent of evidence which gave rise to the creation of it. It even cites things that haven't even been submitted into evidence here. So looking through that, I'm not going to permit the Nick Edwards PowerPoint. Of course, the witness can testify and can testify to any material facts that he knows about that pertain to what's in the PowerPoint, but the PowerPoint itself is going to be disallowed based on what the court's reviewed in that. The next one we'll look at then, I'll call the James Elena story PowerPoint, which consists of the verbatim, I guess, entire James Elena story that's been referenced here in court already by the witness today, and also has slides attached to the end of the story. Again, the defense has raised objections on that PowerPoint, and the court has to consider, first of all, under Rule 403, whether or not that rule states that evidence may be excluded if its probative value is substantially outweighed by a danger of one or more of the following: unfair prejudice, confusing the issues, misleading the jury, undue delay, wasting time, or needlessly presenting cumulative evidence. So that particular exhibit I'll divide into two subparts. Part A would be all of the slides that are just the story itself. Part B are the accompanying following slides, of which there are five or six after the story. The witness this morning describing the story said it was a mix of fantasy and reality, that it has some relevance because it does tend to show actual events that coincided or matched some of the citations within the story. So the court has to consider whether there's enough relevance there. In looking at the story itself, and there's also been a cumulative argument, first, there's a witness on the stand who's already cited to and read through parts of the story. And to have another witness come in and reread parts that have already been read into the record would be cumulative unnecessarily and needlessly under the rule. I think more importantly, reading into the record the entire story would go against Rule 403 because, number one, I do consider the wasting time part of 403. It's like a 35 slides worth of just a long story that is expressly indicated here as just part fantasy. To read the entire story into the record, if that's what the state intended, or publish it likewise to the jury, would create a waste of time, needlessly cumulative evidence, and also maybe too confusing for the jury at that point if it's acknowledged that some of the story is fantasy. I think the jury is allowed to separate whether or not what was fantasy, what was reality. The witness can be allowed, whoever's going to proffer the exhibit, assuming it's admitted, then the witness can document or cite two particular sections in the story that do track actual events, if that's the state's theory. I would find that permissible. But reading the entire story into the record, I wouldn't find to be a wise use of the court's time and the juror's time as well. So I'll allow, if there's adequate foundation for the story in its entirety, to be submitted to the jurors as an exhibit, but I won't allow for the entire story to be read into the record. The witness can make reference to certain sections, point those out to the jurors, and if the jurors wish to delve further into the story in their deliberations, they would be provided a copy, and so they'd be allowed to reference that if they thought it was something relevant that they needed to consider in the deliberations. So that's the first part of that PowerPoint as to the story. The next part is the slides that come along with the end of the story, and the remaining slides I would not allow for several reasons. Again, going into these exhibits need to summarize evidence that's already in the case. Slide 35, for example, has multiple titles, has two different photographs. One was admitted into evidence, one's never been admitted into evidence. It makes argumentative type comments, so that slide I wouldn't allow. Slide 36 has another photograph that's never been admitted into evidence in the case, and slide 37 as well, and contains argumentative language such as substantiation, which is the that's the provenance of the jury to decide whether or not something is substantiated or not. So again, it's not just a summary of evidence, it's argumentative in nature. And then there's a separate chart also included within the summary, and the information in that chart would likely be admissible, but there's also some highlighting within that, and the case law indicates that it's also not fair within these charts if they're summarizing evidence to emphasize certain parts of the evidence and not other parts. That's, again, goes into argument. So on the James and Elena story PowerPoint, The court will not allow the PowerPoint to be an exhibit. However, the story itself can be admitted, assuming there's adequate foundation to do that. And if there are other objections when it's offered, I'll take those up at the time. And the jurors may have a copy, hard copy, for an exhibit, but not the PowerPoint. That'd be the ruling then on that. The final exhibit then is the timeline. And on the timeline, the court has reviewed that, and it appears it comports with evidence that's been previously admitted and would be an appropriate summary under Rule 1006 from what I've seen at this point. The only required modifications to that would be certain slides are highlighted in colors with like red or green, I think maybe yellow, and they stand out. And again, I think it's improper to emphasize certain parts of the evidence. I think that's for argument and for the jurors. And there are a few references in there, such as the word presumably. There was a text presumably to Chad. That, again, goes to argument. So if any of those editorial-type references would be removed and the emphasizing colors that are in there, there's, I think, maybe five or six. There's not that many. But other than that, I don't see a reason why the timeline would not meet the requirements under Rule 1006 and 403 to be admissible, provided there's adequate foundation. So with those modifications, the court will consider allowing its admission. So that's the ruling I have as to the three exhibits. The defense made the objection. Mr. Archibald, do you have any questions on the court's ruling? All right, thank you. Any questions from the state?
Just want to clarify a few things to make sure that I have it clear. On the James and Elena exhibit, the court would allow the PowerPoint of just the story to be submitted as a written exhibit. Is that correct?
Yeah. So instead of PowerPoint, just print it off.
And then take off the last slides, the Part B that the court referenced?
Yes.
And then with regard to the Nick Edwards exhibit, that was a PowerPoint. The court has indicated that would not be allowed. You referenced specific slides. If the state wanted to use individual slides as separate exhibits, would that potentially be allowed depending on the ruling of the court? Slides wouldn't contain the what had been concerning to the court would be the state's position.
Okay. And I didn't mean to – the list I gave was not an inclusive list. It was just a few I pointed out. I saw issues with most of it, if not all of it. There may be specific slides or there are information within those slides that I think is admissible. It's just the form and how it was presented I think does come across as argument. And so I'm not ruling out the content within many of those slides to be permissible. It's just the way it didn't really create a summary. It was essentially tying together argument just like the prosecution would in a closing argument. So if there are other slides you want to use separately and you think they wouldn't fall within those same concerns, I could take those up on an ad hoc basis if they're proffered by the state.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. There were just a few that I don't think contained much written content, just more charts, some graphs, things of that nature that the state may request or attempt to admit. Just wanted to make sure that the whole thing was not prohibited as to individual slides necessarily.
Okay, and I would agree with your interpretation of my ruling there.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome. Okay, that'll conclude the issue on those proposed items of evidence then. With that in mind, let's have the jurors brought in. We can continue with evidence. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Please be seated. All right, we're back on the record on KCR 22-211624 after the lunch break. Appreciate the patience of the jurors. We were taking up some matters outside of your presence before we got started again with additional testimony. Ms. Smith continues with direct examination of... That's fine. It's fine. State's got that sorted out now, so we'll continue with your direct examination of the agent. I'll remind the witness you're still under testimony for your oath. I'm sorry, you're still under oath for your testimony today. And with that in mind, Ms. Smith, if you'd like to continue with your direct, you may.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Let's turn to some chat or information that you included in your summary with between Lori Vallow and Sydney Woodbury. Can you take a look at slide 72? And I believe this part of the chat goes through slide 73.
Correct.
Okay. Why did you include this particular chat session in the summary you prepared?
I included this because of two reasons. First, it shows efforts that were made to hire a caregiver for JJ by Lori Vallow in mid-September. And then in terms of the timing of the last known video that exists of JJ Vallow, that video coincides with the latter half of this particular chat.
Now, I notice at the top of slide 72, it says there are 26 total messages. Did you put all 26 in the slides?
No.
Okay, why not?
Due to the need to convey what's being talked about without overburdening this process with every single message.
Okay. And so just so we're clear, the idea of a summary is to take the highlights, put it in, but the original is still available.
Correct.
Okay. So could you do us a favor and read slide 72 and 73 into the record, please?
Yes. This is chat number 6 from Sydney Woodbury to Lori Vallow on September 18th, 2019. Hi, Lori. This is Sydney Woodbury from care.com. I just received your message and think your little boy sounds so sweet. I actually have worked with kids in the past with autism at a behavior science company and used positive behavior therapy to help them. I love playing with kids and doing fun things. What are the hours you are thinking of, as well as hourly rate? I am currently attending school, so I hope I can help out with the hours you're needing. Response from Lori Vallow to Sydney Woodbury. That's so great. I'm thinking $15 an hour. I'm flexible with time. He gets out of school at 2:30 every day, so a few hours a week after school. We could work around your schedule as far as days of the week and then some time on Saturdays. Again from Lori Vallow. We live on Pioneer Road, only a few minutes from campus. Do you want to come meet us?
And if you could complete the chat front that's reflected on slide 73.
Yes. from Sydney Woodbury to Lori Vallow, yes, I'd love to. Again, from Sydney Woodbury, am I good to come over? From Lori Vallow to Sydney Woodbury, sure, we are here. From Lori Vallow to Sydney Woodbury, picking up JJ now, excited to see you today. From Sydney Woodbury to Lori Vallow, okay, I'm heading over now.
And so there was an, I understand you said the significance of this was an effort to hire somebody to assist with JJ. Did I hear that right?
Yes.
Okay. What was the last known sighting again, just for a reference, of Tylee Ryan alive?
September 8th, 2019.
Based on your review of the communications from Lori Vallow with others and that information in context, prior to September 8th of 2019, was Tylee a resource in helping care for JJ?
Yes.
Okay. What sort of communications did you have that support that conclusion that Tylee helped care for her brother?
There were lots of texts related throughout the review of the iCloud related to Tylee helping to take care of JJ when Lori Vallow had errands to run or needed to be absent from the home for some reason or another.
Okay. And prior to Tylee's disappearance, had Lori had any other support or infrastructure in caring for JJ?
Yes. While they lived in Phoenix, there was a woman named Angela who worked for a company that Lori Vallow had a contract with to have a certain number of hours each week of care provided for JJ.
Okay. Were there, prior to Charles Vallow's death, did he have any role in helping care for JJ?
Of course. He cared for JJ frequently as well.
Okay. And so after September 8th and the move to Rexburg, what infrastructure of support could you find for Lori Vallow to help her care for JJ?
This was the only reference I found.
Okay. And so based on your review of the iCloud record and videos and chats and all the records you told us you looked at, was JJ an easy child to care for and raise?
Not at all. He had severe autism, and so he was a challenging young child.
So by September 18th, who was the primary, almost sole caregiver for JJ Vallow?
Lori Vallow.
Okay. Is there any other reason why you included this chat session with Sydney Woodbury in the iCloud summary you prepared?
Just in context with the back half of this chat.
Okay. And when you say back half of this chat, are we talking slide 73?
No.
Okay.
Slide 75 and 6.
Okay. Well, let's go to slide 74. What are we looking at here?
This is from the video section of Lori for Style at iCloud.com, and this is just a very brief video, but it is the last known video of JJ Vallow while he was alive, and it was taken on September 22nd of 2019.
Prior to September 22nd of 2019, were there other videos of JJ Vallow?
Lots of them.
Okay. After September 22nd of 2019, any of Lori's electronic data, did you find any videos or pictures of JJ Vallow?
No.
And so when you say the back half of this communication, are we talking about what's reflected on slide 75?
Yes.
Okay. Can you read slide 75 into the record, please?
Yes, continuation of chat number 6 from Sydney Woodbury to Lori Vallow on September 24th, 2019. Hi, Lolo. Are we still good for me coming today? From Lori Vallow to Sydney Woodbury. Hi, Sydney. I hope the wedding was good. So JJ's grandparents came this weekend, and they took him for a few weeks to give me a break. So he won't be back until probably the end of October. I wish I had other work for you to do. You are such a darling girl. I understand if you need to get another job. From Lori Vallow to Sydney Woodbury. Of course, I'm not sure when he'll be back, but I'm going to do some traveling while he's gone, probably to see my friends in Hawaii, but I'll let you know for sure when we are both back in Rexburg. You are great.
Now, did this text communication proceed after that date?
There were some additional messages, yes.
But not on September 24th?
Correct.
Okay. Now, the weekend of September 21st, 22nd, and the morning of the 23rd, had Lori had visitors?
Yes.
Who were those visitors?
Melanie Gibb and David Warwick.
Okay. And in, did you find any evidence whatsoever that JJ's grandparents had been in Rexburg September 21st, 22nd, or 23rd?
No.
Let's turn to slide 76. Why did you include this SMS section from Lori for Style in your summary?
This is a significant text string between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell that talks very specifically about Tammy Daybell's pending death.
Okay. Could you read for us, could you read for us slide 76 and 77 into the record?
Yes.
Thank you.
Line 810 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. Good night, Angel Lily, so excited to go on our date. Line 782 from Lori Vallow to Alex Cox. We are supposed to go on a real date tonight, but we are discussing it. Perhaps an evening at home would be better, so we are not out and about. I'll let you know. But you could come and sing with us after your shower. Line 773 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. Hello, sweet angel. Big news about Tammy. Please let me know if you are awake and can talk. I love you.
And what's on 77?
Line 772 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. The short version is that she has been switched. Tammy is in limbo, and a level 3 demonic entity named Viola is in her body. It happened about 10 p.m. and was done by Tammy's sister, Sam, who I always knew was 3D, but it turns out she is multiple creation. Line 771 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. Viola has been attached for about a year to my niece, Danica, who is Sam's 12-year-old daughter. I have connected with Tammy in limbo, and she is very frustrated and upset. She wants Viola removed as soon as possible. Viola seems to be similar to Penelope. The personality differences from Tammy should be evident quickly. Please seek a confirmation on this, but I have now checked 3 times since I got home and get more affirmative answers each time.
And if we may, could we proceed to read line 78 as well?
Yes. Line 770 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. Sam is much like Brandon. She has been my biggest enemy over the years. She refuses to read my books and threw the biggest fit when we moved to Idaho. She has only visited us when the kids got married and always fled Idaho within hours, like she was being burned. She's definitely comparable to Brandon and Summer. Line 769 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. not fully sure of the timing for removal, but once her actions verify the differences, I don't want to wait.
If I may ask a couple of questions about that text communication. Are you aware of the date that Brandon Boudreaux was shot at?
I am.
What date was Brandon Boudreaux shot at?
October 2nd of 2019.
Okay. Are you aware of the date that Tammy Daybell was shot at by someone in her driveway?
I am.
What date was she shot at?
October 9th of 2019.
Now, and so at this point of this text communication in the late evening hours of October 3rd to the early morning hours or the daytime hours of October 5th, was Tammy Daybell still alive?
Yes.
Okay. So can you help us understand what a real date means in context of the timeline and the text exchange you've read to us?
Yes. Lori Vallow and her children moved to Rexburg the first part of September of 2019. Based on the investigation, both children were killed in September of 2019. Now in the early part of October, there's a reference to going on a real date out in public. Rexburg is a small town, and so that is problematic for Chad Daybell still being married to Tammy Daybell.
Okay. And so by this date, Lori Vallow is unencumbered and fully free?
Correct.
But Chad Daybell is not?
Correct.
And so was there any information that would suggest that Lori wanted to go on a real date?
That's what she stated to Alex Cox on October 4th.
Okay. And so was there any significance to you in context of the iCloud in the review where he talks about big news to Tammy, about Tammy? Please let me know if you're awake and can talk.
Yes, within 12 hours of the text regarding going on a real date, Chad Daybell now has big news about Tammy, and that news was that she's in limbo because her body's been inhibited by a level 3 demonic entity named Viola.
Okay. Turning to some of the texts that are on slide 77, just so I'm clear, the text from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow is asking her to seek confirmation?
Correct.
Okay. And so Chad is seeking Lori's opinion?
Correct.
And turning to the text on slide 78, who is it who is discussing timing for removal?
That's a text from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow.
Okay. And was there any indication that at this point Lori Vallow protested, said anything in any way in opposition to a timing for removal and not wanting to wait?
No.
Okay. Before we move to the next text, is there anything else on that text communication between the two about the entity inside of Tammy and not wanting to wait that you wish to review?
No.
Okay. Turning to a text communication with Lori Vallow and Melanie Boudreaux reflected on slide 79 and 80, why did you include these two slides?
I included these slides because they contain travel information for Lori Vallow and show that she was traveling out of state during the first attempt on Tammy's life, which took place on October 9th of 2019.
Okay. So the previous texts with Chad about not wanting to wait were on or about October 5th, correct?
October 4th and October 5th.
Okay. And then the first attempt on Tammy's life with the shooter in the driveway was October 9th.
Correct.
October 7th, is that some of the text communications we see in slide 79 and slide 80?
Yes.
Could you please read those into the record?
Line 729 from Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreaux. I'm really feeling like we need to go to Missouri and work. Maybe we can fly there on Thursday and back on Sat. Line 728 from Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreau. American has a nonstop flight, PHX, to Kansas City Thursday at 1 p.m., then fly back on Sat at 6:30 p.m. Audrey said we could stay with her, but I told her we could get a hotel and she could stay with us. She will take us to all the amazing sites.
And slide 80, please.
Line 726, from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow. What about Brandon not being able to take the kids to it? Does Dad think I will need to be here? Line 725, from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow to Utah. Line 724, from Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreau. Nope, you need to be unavailable. That is the schedule. Line 723, from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow. Okay, Captain.
Can you help us understand the significance of this text messaging in context of your summary?
It simply illustrates that Lori Vallow made travel arrangements and was not present in Idaho during the first attempt on Tammy Daybell's life.
And there's a reference on slide 80, line 723, from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow. Okay, Captain. Do you see that?
I do.
Did you see any other evidence of Lori Vallow giving direction or instruction to Melanie Boudreau on what to do or how to do or when to do things?
Yes, I saw that on a number of occasions.
Okay. Did you see that same sort of what to do, how to do it, sort of okay, Captain, instructions given to other people within their group of friends?
The only other one would be to Alex Cox.
Now, turning to line 81, slide 81, I apologize. Can you tell us why you included this text exchange between Audrey Bautario and Lori Vallow?
Yes, this is a text string between Audrey Bautario and Lori Vallow, wherein Audrey Bautario makes an inquiry about Lori Vallow and C, Chad Daybell, working regarding Tammy Daybell.
Okay. Could you please read slide 81 in?
Line 669, from Audrey Bautario to Lori Vallow. How did yesterday go? Line 668, from Audrey Bautario to Lori Vallow, with you and C working. Line 667, from Lori Vallow to Audrey Bautario. Well, we did a lot of work today. We got her out, but a new one got in, so we are still working on it. Audrey, any ideas you have would be greatly appreciated. Line 666, from Audrey Bautario to Lori Vallow. Okay.
Now, I realize we haven't had you reading the different emojis that the jury can see, but do you see the emoji that's at the end of Audrey Bautario to Lori Vallow?
I do.
In your experience, what does the face with the two eyes X'd out?
I don't object to any characterization of this, Judge.
That's without foundation sustained.
Okay. Have you had experience in looking up and reviewing various suspects' communications back and forth?
Yes.
Okay. Does that include review of what emojis are included in their text communications?
Sometimes.
Okay. Do you have any experience in looking up the emoji with the face and the eyes X'd out?
Yes.
In your research and your review of this iCloud account, what did the face with the eyes X'd out signify?
Again, I'm going to object to mischaracterization. It's too speculative.
Overruled.
It can be associated with death.
Okay. Why did you include this text communication in your summary exhibit supplied?
Because of the inquiry regarding Tammy Daybell, particularly in light of the date of these communications, which is subsequent to the first attempt on Tammy Daybell's life.
Okay. And what day did Tammy Daybell, what day was Tammy Daybell killed?
October 19th of 2019.
So this text communication between Audrey and Lori was between the attempted shooting and the day she was killed?
Correct.
Is there anything else of significance you would like to review on slide 81?
No.
Turning to slide 82, why did you include this series of communications between Lori Vallow and Melanie Boudreau?
I included this for context purposes because it is a similar conversation relating to Brandon Boudreau with references for could he go, similar to what we've seen in other communications.
Okay. Could you please read into the record slides 82 and 83?
Yes. Line 663 from Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreau. Yeah, but until that agreement is signed by the judge, it is all subject to change. That's probably the reason for the delay. Line 662 from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow. Is there a possibility he could go before I move? Line 661 from Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreau. There's always that possibility. We will work on it. Just have faith and do whatever the Lord tells you. He is always right. Line 655 from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow. I don't recall the words to get him out, but should we try?
And then turning to slide 83.
Line 654 from Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreau. I know them. I'll work on it now. Put all your energy in. Line 647 from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow. I've worked on them all day and evening. Line 646. From Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreau. Me too. He's got to be ready to go. Line 645 from Melanie Boudreau to Lori Vallow. I know.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to review with the jury on why you included the text communication between Melanie Boudreau and Lori Vallow from October 14, 2019?
No.
Turning to text communication from October 19th, 2019, why did you include these SMS messages from Lori Verstile?
These are messages to Lori Vallow informing her of Tammy Daybell's death while Lori Vallow was traveling in Hawaii.
Okay. And so at this point, Lori Vallow was in Hawaii. Do you know who she was in Hawaii with?
She was there with Melanie Boudreau initially, and then Audrey Baratario flew over and joined them some days after Lori Vallow and Melanie Boudreau had arrived.
Okay. If you could please read into the record slide 84.
Line 541 from unknown individual to Lori Vallow. I'm not sure if you heard, but Chad's wife died last night. Line 540 from Lori Vallow to unknown individual. Oh my gosh, I did not hear that. I'm in Hawaii and it's 6 a.m. Line 539 from Lori Vallow to unknown individual. Do you know what happened? Line 538 from unknown individual to Lori Vallow. Yes, she awoke in the night coughing, threw up, collapsed, and passed away.
Why did you include this series of text communications specifically from the morning of October 19th?
Due to its relevance in the death of Tammy Daybell.
Okay. Did you have reason to believe that Lori had learned other ways, in another manner, of Tammy Daybell's death?
There's nothing in the iCloud to indicate that.
Let's turn to text communication from October 19th with Chad Daybell. Can you please read slides 85 into the record?
Yes. Line 532 from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell. Not fun without you. Can you call me? line 531, from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell. How are you doing is the question. Line 530, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. I'm hanging in there. My parents are staying here, and we are still getting visitors, but I will call you soon.
Okay. Why did you include these text?
Subsequent to Tammy Daybell's death on October 19th, 2019, there's a flurry of text messages between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell that are insightful as to the nature of the relationship between Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow and their subsequent plans now that Tammy Daybell is dead.
Turning to slide 86, could you read that one into the record?
Yes. Line 528, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow, percentage in body, whole store 24, Bucola 11, Grisson 14. Line 527, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow, great job on lowering them. I loved talking with you. It is baby night, so come get me later. Line 526, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow, missing you so much. I can feel you in bed with me, though. Can't wait to truly hold you tightly every day and night. Line 525, from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell, I'm missing you more. I need you desperately. I can't wait.
So this text communication happens around just after midnight on the 20th through around 7 in the morning on October 20th, 2019, correct?
Yes.
Less than 24 hours after Tammy Daybell dies?
Roughly 24 hours, yes.
Okay. Any other significance to this particular slide?
No.
Okay. Moving towards the next series of communication from on the 20th, why did you include slide 87?
These are a continuation. This slide and probably the next two are a continuation of that text string between Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow.
Okay. Could you please read in slide 87, and then we'll move to 88 and 89.
Line 524, from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell. Need you to hold me tight. That would be great. What about the idea of you coming here Thursday or Friday? Or do you want me to come home? Line 523, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. Their apartment is haunted, and we can't clear the place. So they are looking to move anyway, and I have the perfect place for them. I need to be here to get sorting the financial stuff, and I truly need your help. So please come home Thursday so we can spend the night together. Then, as soon as I have things under control, we can return. I seriously want you to look for a condo for us while you are there that we could return to at the first of the month.
And please read slide 88.
Line 518, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. I want to get going full steam on the Lily workout plan. Tighten the abs, get a full body tan, grow my hair out. This could be really good for both of us. Line 517, from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell. I love that plan. It's not soon enough, though. This is torture. Maybe you need to clear my mind so I can't remember how much I love you. Line 516, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. I will try, but it feels like Raphael and Lily are together at about 100%. Not sure it will ever be lower again.
And if you could read slide 89.
Line 515, from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell. That's true. I do feel you. I feel lovesick. I can't sleep. I don't want to eat. I just want you. It's so consuming. Line 514, from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. I know exactly how you feel. I'm feeling sad, but it isn't for the reason everyone thinks.
And the I'm feeling sad, but it isn't for the reason everyone thinks was 8 in the morning on October 20th, 2019?
Correct.
Okay. In terms of those three slides and that text communication, is there anything else of significance you wish to cover?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Turning to slide 90. This, why did you include this text communication between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell?
This short text string between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell is extremely important in that Lori Vallow expresses a concern to Chad Daybell regarding Alex Cox.
Can you please read into the record slide 90?
Line 482 from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell. I had a bad dream about Al. Make sure he is still him and protect him. Line 481 from Lori Vallow to Chad Daybell. He would be the one they used to get to us both. All this alone time is not good for him. Line 479 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. I will try to reach out to him later today. Line 471 from Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow. I just cleared all of Al's weapons, curses, and cords and filled him with malachite healing balm. I also put angels around him.
And if you could read slide 91.
This is a slide from the notes section of Lori for Style, line 161. Alex Cox, multiple creation, fourth creation exalted 9 times, sibling to me 2 times on fourth creation. Rose is exalted, married 3 times on fourth creation, and became eternal companions after fourth creation. His mission is to help Lori. Okay.
So the exchange between Lori and Chad about Alex, why did you include that specifically?
I included it because of the reference to Al and him being the one they would use to get to both Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow.
And the date of that exchange was October 23rd, 2019?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know the date that Alex Cox passed away?
Oh, boy. December. I want to say December 12th, but I'm sorry, I can't recall that exact date.
That's okay. Early December, beginning of December.
December 2nd would be the next date that comes to my mind. But again, I can't recall clearly. I know it's December of 2019.
Fair enough. And so in October, there's a text communication about Al being the one that would get to them. Correct?
That Al would be the one they use to get to us both.
Do you have any information about when Alex Cox, did Alex Cox subsequently marry someone from this group?
Yes.
Okay. Who did he marry after this date?
Zulema Pestentes.
Okay. And then sometime towards the beginning or the first couple weeks of December, Alex Cox is dead?
Correct.
Okay. And then why did you include the notes section of Lori for Style on Alex Cox?
This contains some of the religious concepts that were pertinent to this investigation, but mainly for the last line, that his mission is to help Lori.
Okay. Now, when you say it relates to the religious concepts and specifically about Alex Cox's job to help Lori, what was that based on in terms of your review of the iCloud?
During the review of the iCloud, there's voluminous information regarding the religious beliefs of Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow. And this is one note that contains references to some of those things.
Okay. And did you see through your review of the various iCloud accounts and emails and information in the iCloud accounts for Lori Vallow, any sort of definition of Alex Cox's role in this religious group of friends?
One of the main references was that his mission in life was to protect and to help his sister, Lori.
Okay. Okay. And within the communications of the iCloud that you reviewed, the communications between Lori and Chad and Alex and others, did you find any evidence that Alex believed that his mission was to help and protect Lori?
Yes.
Now, turning to slide 92, I see that it appears to be a text between Lori Vallow and Melanie Boudreau.
Correct.
Okay. Could you please read slide 92 into the record?
Line 175 from Lori Vallow to Melanie Boudreau. Will you do this job if your whole family turns against you? That is what the Lord has asked of us. Our glories will be worth it, and they will all shrink in our presence. It will be a sad day for those who choose to oppose us when we work for the Lord and are his valiant warriors. Be strong, my little one. We will be gone in a few.
Why did you include this particular text message to Melanie Boudreau in the iCloud summary?
I included this because it is illustrative of Lori Vallow's beliefs and a statement that she made to Melanie Boudreau, who was part of this group.
And what particular statement?
The entirety of the text, I believe, is her statement.
Okay. Is there anything else of significance for that particular text?
No.
Okay. Now, in your review of the iCloud, did you also see videos in the iCloud?
Hundreds of them.
Okay. And I think you've told us you saw videos and emails and documents, hundreds and if not thousands of documents.
Yes.
Okay. Did you find any documentation of a patriarchal blessing given to Alex Cox by Chad Daybell?
Yes, that was found in the iCloud.
Your Honor, I'd ask that the witness be given State's Exhibit 50A, a courtesy copy of which has already been given the court.
All right. And is that, I think that's previously admitted?
That patriarchal blessing was the recording that was done, I believe, but 50 itself, 50A is the written copy from the iCloud. It should be admitted as part of 29, but we pulled that specific document out and gave it its own number, 50A.
All right. Would there be any objection to the admission of 50A that's being offered?
Yes, Your Honor. It's cumulative.
Response?
Your Honor, it is not cumulative. A recording was played for the jury. The written copy found in the iCloud has not been provided.
All right. I've considered Rule 403. Do not find it's needlessly cumulative, so it can be admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor. May the witness be shown it?
Yes.
Thank you. Just so that he can look at it. Thank you, sir.
That wraps up segment number three in our continuous coverage to the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. There's much more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage. Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell
from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.